Greetings to you on this day as we dive into chapter 29 of My Soul Waits by Marva Don. Again, just three chapters to go in this journey through the Psalms. The title here today is Yahweh Will Give Us the Desires of Our Hearts. The challenge challenges us, right? The title challenges us because we may or may not think that that is true. And so let's see what Marva has to say here. It's from Psalm 37. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Well, one kind of loneliness strikes when we feel as though we are the only ones trying to bring about justice in a messed up world. And I think we could all agree that we live so often in a messed up world. Against the economic chaos, the political chaos, all of the things swirling around us, the healthcare crisis, issues of racism and sexism that continue to go unresolved, the needing for breakthrough in how humanity lives alongside one another and supports and encourages one another, the causes of poverty and crime, what to do in terms of resource support in the places that need it most. How can we lessen the gap between the rich and poor? And how can we secure honesty in leadership, political leadership? How will our cause, our plight, be vindicated? And when we get discouraged, everyone and everything around us seems corrupt, yes? Especially so when we are discouraged. Well, Psalm 37 is a wisdom poem that announces vindication, that it will not always be this way. And throughout Psalm 37, the phrase, do not fret, occurs frequently. Do not fret about these things. Do not get stuck in your stuff around these things. In the introductory verses, the wise poet reminds us that we don't have to fret, first of all, because the evil ones like grass will soon wither away. Not my word, but in the scriptures. The evil ones are going to wither away. The things that are not meant to be here or not to last, they will finally dissipate. And only the good, only love and life will win. Only those things will stand. Isaiah 40, verse 6 and 8 insist all flesh is grass. And it brings to mind a song for me. Don't worry about a thing because every little thing is going to be all right. Don't worry about a thing because every little thing is going to be all right. But that may be relative in how we understand that as well. And so after that encouraging reminder to avoid worrying, the poet now turns to the positive side in the verses before us and tells us what to do instead. His plan for action might not change our condition of being alone or troubled, but it could turn our painful loneliness into a place of beneficial solitude or discernment, or more moving into a position of action. You see, first of all, he urges us to trust in the Lord, a phrase that we've seen many times throughout the Psalms. And then the psalmist exhorts us to do good. The significant order here reminds us that we don't do good out of our ability to accomplish it, but out of our trusting. Our relationship with God enables us to produce what is good for the benefit of others. The phrase do good implies an invitation to cooperate with the Creator in accomplishing God's purposes in the world. I often talk about this as the world is not as God imagines it to be. The world has gone maybe in a direction that God would not desire. And so we pay attention to how God would speak and how God would draw us back to life, abundant life for all, a place of equity, a place of care, a place of agape love. And so how systems are created, how resources are shared, how governments are organized, those could all be informed by this radical message of God and in Jesus and the Holy Spirit. But again, we in our sin often miss the mark. And then in our sin, there's the worry and there's the anxiety and there's the fear that gets in the midst of it. So now the second poetic line here invites us to inhabit the land and enjoy safe pasture. The New American Standard Bible translation of this sentence stresses that when we dwell in the land, we are to cultivate faithfulness or to feed on God's faithfulness. Okay? To cultivate faithfulness or to feed on God's faithfulness. And there's a sense of steadfastness here, of resting in God, nourishing oneself by God's steadfastness, so that, again, you can do that good. You can do the next right thing. You can do the hard thing that God may be asking you to engage, that you could lay down your life for the sake of the other, that you could practice abundant generosity so that others could live. All of those things point to God's steadfast faithfulness for us and how we trust and live into that. And then there's another rendering of this that gives this image of safe pasture. And that too gives us a picture of hope. Because as we dwell in the land, as we're in this pasture, the seasons of rain and sunshine and harvest of faithfulness, those are there. And it's more enjoyed by those who recognize that it's the Lord who makes it secure, yet instead of people doing that for themselves or having to create it all, that God is providing a long life's way. Now, for those of us who read this psalm in the 21st century, these words can continue to convey a sense of security. Very few people live in the countryside now, less than before, as family farms are sold and people migrate toward cities or urban centers. But there is this sense of, again, stability, of trusting in him and that we're empowered to do good in that place of security that is found in God. And as his steadfastness is nourishing us, we pass those good gifts on to others wherever we are. And this ties very closely with the psalmist's next point, that kind of security in the faithfulness of the Lord is much more available to those who supremely delight in him. Again, who recognize him. There's a joy in that. Yes, there's a discovery in that. There's a relationship in that. And so it's God's presence and guidance in the midst of the smallest circumstances where we stop and pause to give thanks. I love when Marva writes about this because, again, we often in our world will focus on the big or the glorious or the amazing, right? The abundance of something. What if we gave God thanks for the simplest and the smallest and the tiniest of things? If any of you have ever sprained your ankle, you quickly realize, oh my goodness, how this whole body is tied together. And how strong an ankle is actually before it is strained or twisted. And it takes time to recover from that. If you've ever dislocated one of your fingers and had to have it reset, you quickly learn how difficult and how the challenge is if something's not working as you grew accustomed to. Again, we take so much for granted. It's not just in the Thanksgiving banquet or the Easter celebration. It's in the meal that you eat at a park bench on a blanket. It's the granola bar as you run out of the house to attend to your kids or grandkids in their next function. There's so much. And sometimes the gratitude of the tiniest of things just to look somebody in the eye and to share a point of connection. That we're not in this world of lone and that somebody actually understands what I'm going through. All that's important. And as we do those recognitions of the tiny things and we live in that kind of gratitude, I think we more delight in God, the one who makes this entire life possible. And Marva writes that once she was explaining this notion for a church in Seattle, and during her visit, a person told to her about his experience in New Zealand, where this very delicate tea was served. And most of the U.S. tourists there who were with him loaded it with sugar and cream, and then they complained that it had no flavor. Well, he said many Christians load up their lives with the sugars and creams of luxuries and entertainments, and then they're unable to see the exquisite ways in which God is working in their lives because you just miss it. You're so focused on that exquisite thing instead of the thing maybe that's right in front of you. And we who live in such a wealthy and even wasteful country, who have so many things and so many varieties of things, that we've lost our appreciation for them. I try to talk to my kids about this when we talk about meal choices. And our meal and our meal plan in our home is pretty robust with all kinds of variety of things. And it sometimes the kids complain, you know, that we just kind of had that not too long ago, or why do we have to eat leftovers? And when I articulate to them that in most points and places of the world, the menu choice is very small, and it's also limited in how much and how often in terms of you get to eat, the eyes kind of get big, and again, they have no recognition that that could ever be. It's like I'm telling them a fairy tale, you know, a story that just can't be true. Where kids might believe the story of Elf on the Shelf, will they believe in the story of the reality that people face? Well, often not until you've experienced it. And if you don't know that you're living in abundance, you don't know that people also live in scarcity. You miss the mark on all of it. And so this is a real part. Our houses are cluttered. We have all kinds of possessions. And we may not cherish then those things that we have. But in our spiritual lives, we frequently do not delight so thoroughly in the Lord either, and that he would be the focus of our existence. I think we've recognized a little bit more what we're missing now because of COVID with relationship and ability to engage as church and community. But it's rare that somebody expresses to me that they miss worship in community. They'll say they miss their friends. And so again, nothing wrong with that. We were made for relationship. We often experience God in the other. But do we recognize God in the midst of our worship? And what is taking place there amongst the gathered community? Much to consider in this time that we have been exiled and outside of our buildings and living more faithfully and locally in neighborhoods and homes. And what is our point of connection there? Who are we calling? Who are we relating to? How are we sharing God's message of life and hope with those around us? People will often express to me as a pastor as well that they love our online worship. And if I ask, have you been sharing it with others, rare is that response of yes. It may be, I send it to my daughter or a friend that I've had throughout my life. But when I ask, you know, are you sharing it with those who maybe don't have a faith community, those outside your social circle, those in your greater neighborhood? And again, the answer is rarely a yes. Why is that? Well, I think part of it is we have it for ourselves. We enjoy what we have, and we often are not thinking about the other and how God could be embraced by the other if we were faithful in our response of doing good with the abundance of resources that we have in our own life. Yes, those tools and gifts for worship and faith growth. So many things to consider as we delight in Yahweh and in the desires of our hearts. Now, the psalmist goes on to talk a little bit about how we have to wrestle with this truth, especially when we are lonely, that we may believe that, again, why do things have to be a certain way, God? Why can't they be changed instantly? Why won't you come through for me right now? And there's a temptation for us to offer glib answers or superficial comforts. And the fact is, we can't do that. And we're not called to do that. We can be lonely. We can live in a place of grief. But this point of resting in truth and finding our longing in God is where our deepest peace will ultimately come from. It's hard to truly trust that or to believe that as we yearn for the other things around us. But I think in the midst of why can't things be different? Why do things have to be this way for me? Those are faithful questions, and they're meant to help us move toward the deepest shalom and the deepest peace we can find as we discover our life in God. Now, the psalm's next phrase here is about committing your way to the Lord. And in the Hebrew, this is a very graphic image, to roll onto Yahweh your way, to roll it as one rolls stones into a groove or puts your way firmly into place. If we do that, the stones are rolling. We can't just grab it back and continue to fret about it. We trust it over to God. We roll our conduct, our mode of life, or concerns upon Yahweh and trust in Him that God's going to act. And then Marva goes on to say, as long as we're hanging on to some things, we're preventing God from accomplishing God's purposes. And I am challenged by that. What am I holding on to, hanging on to, that is preventing me from fully accomplishing God's purposes? Or how much are we holding God out by our stubborn insistence that we know better how to do things? How much are we holding God up by our own stubborn insistence that we know better on how to do things? Those are stumbling blocks, certainly, for us. Well, as the psalmist goes on here, he goes on to talk about shining like the dawn. And when we care for the needy or protest maybe military aggression, or shelter the homeless, or fight other injustices in our society, the psalmist is saying our cause will be vindicated. And if you look at the humble order of so many who've gone before us and who are working faithfully today, the Sisters of Mother Teresa, World Vision Hospitals, Lutheran Community Services, the Salvation Army in our inner cities, our shelter programs, all of those things, as Isaiah 58:7-8 promises, when you work to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe them and not turn away from your own flesh and blood, then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Isaiah 58:7-8. When you work to do those things, then, yes, shining, the light will break forth, and your healing will take place, and your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be evidenced, will be seen. Powerful reminders that there is a call on our life, and the goodness and wholeness and the righteousness and justice that God seeks to work out in our life is to blaze with the light of justice so that God's truth will be clear. God at work in our life. And the ascent in all of this is on the invitation to us to keep on keeping on, to do good, even at great cost, even when it seems like the world is on fire, and to be righteous, commit rolling our way to Yahweh, the vindicating, the justice, the full shalom, in all of our efforts, that ultimately those are up to God. And all we need to be concerned about is that we are thoroughly delighting in the Lord, so that the deepest desires of our being are tied in with God's faithfulness. That, church, is relationship. And so some questions for meditation. Why is the order of trust in the Lord and do good so important? Notice I didn't say do good and trust in the Lord. The order is trust in the Lord and do good. Why is that order so important? Number two, how do I nourish myself with faithfulness? Number three, what is it like to take exquisite delight in God? Number four, what are the deepest desires of your heart? Take some time and be honest. And number five, what matters have you rolled onto Yahweh? And what matters have you taken back? What ones have you fully put into God's hands? And which ones have you taken back and why? Until next time, as you meditate on that, may you know that Yahweh is with you each and every step of the way within your heart. God's peace.